On today's episode of Good Word, Tom Haberstroh is back, and we talk about Luka making the Clippers look old, the Suns being also old and in big trouble, and we give our top five rookie seasons of all time. All that and much more coming up on today's episode.
Good Word with Goodwill on Yahoo Sports. Ball don't lie. And here is Vince Goodwill.
Welcome to the Good Word. My name is Vincent Goodwill, senior NBA reporter for Yahoo Sports. We are part of the Ball Don't Lie podcast. Get us wherever you get your podcast. It is Wednesday, which means we are back to Wednesdays with Tom Haberstroh. Of course, he's a contributor here at Yahoo Sports. He's got the big number. I think that's coming out later today. If you by the time you hear this, the big number will probably already be out. So get all of that where you get your CDs and tapes. Tom, how you doing, man?
I'm doing great. You look great for someone who was right until 1 a.m.
Man, it's a late night in Los Angeles, and it's even a later night when you're waiting on Kyrie Irving and Luka Doncic to talk to the media because they like to take their sweet damn time.
That's always tough. You know, when they do the double or the triple press conference, that's brutal.
Yes.
You know, like, hey, LeBron might be ready, but he's not. I remember in Miami, it was always LeBron and D-Wade would always come out together.
Yep.
And one guy would be ready to go, but the other one would be taking their sweet time getting up to the stage, and we would just have to wait there. But, you know, this is first world problems, Vinny.
It is. It is. And I'm sure one of them dudes just had extra time to put on more shea butter. That's all that was. Just more time to put on shea butter after the shower. But I think we can start there, Tom, because I was there. Dallas tied the series with the Clippers, predictably, in my opinion. Kawhi Leonard came back, but didn't really, I don't think, look like himself. 96-93, there was a late buzzer-beating three by Paul George that kind of made the game look a little bit closer. But it seemed like Dallas was in firm control time. It just seemed to me, I don't know what it looked like from TV, but it just seemed like the game was being played on Dallas's terms, from the physicality to how quick they were to get all the 50-50 balls. And then you got two guys who can just create shots late in the clock, probably better than any two players in a given team in any of these playoff series. Maybe this side of Denver, I suppose.
Yeah, Vinny, when you look at that game last night, the fact that they lost, the Mavericks lost Tim Hardaway Jr. and Gafford to injuries,
yeah,
and basically they were zeros out there. And then, you know, they have to deal with Kawhi coming back. He didn't look 100%, but he was confident. He was getting to his spots. He wasn't as efficient as he usually is. He was 0-for-5 from downtown. That's not going to continue. I thought he looked much better than most players, stars, would if they had basically a month off of the game and then coming in the middle of the playoffs. So I'm glad to see Kawhi moving, and he's not a guy who likes leg braces or knee braces out
right,
there.
He
looked like himself, with the exception of the perimeter jump shooting. Now, when Luka has that going and Kyrie is playing that well, they're just about unbeatable, right? Like, Luka Doncic, he dictates the pace in such a way that no matter who's on the floor, he's always in control. And
yep,
he's bigger than everybody. He's stronger at the rim. The timing and the footwork is insane. And that step back, man, that step back three-pointer where he roared to the audience. I don't know if you could hear that, Vinny, from where you were sitting, but
I can read
that
lips.
Was such yeah. My daughter, she's 7 years old. She was watching the highlight this morning on TV, and she looks at the screen when he roared to the crowd, and she's like, "Daddy, there's a bear on the TV." I'm like, "What?" Looking at the TV, and it's Luka screaming, and the dude, like, man, that step back is, we talk about the most unguardable shots in NBA history, Vinny.
Yep.
We talk about the sky hook with Kareem. We got to talk about Luka Doncic's step back, because when we look at the numbers, okay, Vinny, Luka Doncic, that dagger against James Harden, it's his own shot. But Luka Doncic has 201 made step back three-pointers this season, according to Second Spectrum data. 201. The next highest in the NBA is Steph Curry at 86. So
he's lapping the field.
lap in the field. If you added up Steph Curry, James Harden, and LeBron James's made step back three pointers, it would still pale in comparison to Luka Doncic on that one shot. So he's kind of like the new dog learning the older dog's tricks with James Harden, with the D cells, with the step back threes. Like, that's all James Harden stuff. And yep. Now he's doing it in his face at, you know, at the Clippers. And it's just, what are you going to do?
Pray. Because I think the Mavericks kind of have this formula where, and I don't know if you see it like I see it, when they picked up PJ Washington, they picked up Daniel Gafford. These are not like household names. And they came from losing teams, so you weren't sure exactly what type of habits they had. They've come in and given this team a defensive identity or an enhanced defensive identity. Daniel Gafford didn't even play a lot last night, like with the ankle. What's the ankle? His back injury. Tim Hardaway hit the ankle. But just from the end of the regular season or that point in March where the game started getting called a little bit different, and you add in a guy like PJ Washington who does not mind getting in your face, does not mind mixing it up, and he hit shots last night. Like, he had 10 of his 18 in the fourth quarter. That was clearly going to be the game plan from Ty Lue, which is was basically, I don't respect you guys. The Derrick Joneses, the PJ Washingtons, the Tim Hardaways, the Dante Exums, we don't respect you. We're going to sell out on Luka and Kyrie. We're going to make this as ugly as you want to make it, and we're going to make you guys make shots. The problem is, Dallas like playing just as ugly as the Clippers like playing, and except their old guys ain't that old. Like Paul George and James Harden and Kawhi, and you mentioned Kawhi. Kawhi looked better as the game went on. Mm-hmm. You can tell he started finding his rhythm. But it was tough sledding for Harden. It was tough sledding for Paul George because those guys were in their face all night. And I'll tell you who else was in their face all night. Mr. Step Back King himself, Luka Doncic. Hey. They were not getting anything on him. And Luka is not the dude that's going to play defense. But if you allow more physical play, Luka's a big boy. You're not going to just go around him if he sticks his chest out there for you. Like, it just seems that Dallas looks a lot quicker. And Luka, when he hunts his matchups. And one thing that happened, I don't know if you noticed this. The Clippers started to hunt Luka. And you know what Dallas did? We're running a double. We're going to get the ball out of it. A, we're trying to save Luka in his body because he played 46 minutes, so we're not going to have him out there on the island. But we're also going to disrupt everything you do. So you think you got Luka on the island, boom, you're going to take that ball out. I thought that was excellent strategy from Jason Kidd.
Yeah, and the tough thing about the Clippers is sometimes that ball sticks, you know, because you have such great ISO players that they're looking for those matchups. And then once they double, they got to make quick decisions and attack, attack, attack. But James Harden, PG, and Kawhi, they all want to operate on ISOs in on an island and kind of take their time. That's not going to beat those, you know, double teams. You got to be a lot more intentional and a lot more aggressive against those double teams and move the ball quickly. Exactly, exactly, Vinny. So that's going to be something I think Ty Lue is going to try to take advantage of in Game 3. But the story to me is Kyrie and Luka Doncic being able to, you know, dictate the game on their terms, and James Harden just like withered away down the stretch, and they need him. Like, this is why they acquired him, is, hey, we're going to need Kawhi and PG to be themselves, but we need that third piece to step up in crunch time. And historically, that's not been James Harden's MO in the playoffs, but hopefully with, you know, more reps, they'll be able to lean on James Harden down the stretch. Maybe Kawhi gets his legs back and he's able to turn into a Terminator again in the postseason. But, you know, I think, Vinny, I went through this, every one of the Yahoo Sports tweets about our picks. I think you and I had the same exact picks on all eight series.
Are you serious?
Every single one. We were seeing eye to eye in the number, not just the team that was going to win the series, but also the opponent. In the number of games. So you and I, we're all over this. I think we picked Dallas in seven, and I don't feel bad about that pick at all. I think it's going to go deep.
No, I mean, here's the thing. I would have taken the Clippers, but I don't know what Kawhi Leonard we're going to get. And
they got him, and they still lost, you know?
Well, it's not just that. We talked about, like, the changing of the guard and all that stuff. We're going to get to the Suns and Timberwolves right after this. But when you talk about Harden, and you talk about Paul, and you talk about Kawhi, we're talking about those dudes in their resumes. Like, we're not talking about necessarily how great they can get to right now. We're not seeing James Harden in his absolute prime where he's getting to the line 10, 11, 12 times a game and controlling the pace and everything else. And Paul George is more getting by off of the athleticism he has left as opposed to being the great athlete. And Kawhi Leonard, we saw him dragging a leg in 2019. It's 5 years later. Like, you don't get healthier as you get older. You don't get more dynamic as you get older. There's like this little sweet spot between being young and inexperienced and stupid, where you just kind of find a sweet spot there, and being older and crotchety. You know what I mean? Mm. Where you're relying more on what you used to do than where you can go. And I think that's kind of where the sweet spot the Clippers probably aged out of. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what they are. They looked slow to the ball last night. And when you allow more physical play, I thought that was going to help the Clippers. It seems like it helps Dallas more. And the refs are just like, hey, sing for your supper, dog. You know what I mean? Like, I think the refs are saying, at least to me, we're not going to help you. The insurance fraud, when you go down the lane and you're going to act as if you're getting grabbed or whatever it is, you better figure it out. You're going to see, I think, Tom, who has sophisticated offenses, who can get to their second and third actions, who can really make something out of nothing late in the clock. And it looks like Dallas is really good at that.
Yeah, I keep forgetting that Luka's 25 years old, Vinny. He's coming into his prime, you know? Mm-hmm, like, he's got fresh legs compared to James Harden, compared to Kawhi, compared to PG. And we look at him, and he looks like he's an old man out there. Because of the way he moves, and he seems to always be walking with like a slight limp, or he looks like he's 35, not 25. But I also think the mind is sharper too. So like, if the game is going to be like prison ball, I think Luka can use his size to his advantage and his hands to his advantage and just be more physical out there. It's going to take a lot more out of his system, but I think that actually helps him. He's so much stronger than the average defender, that if it's going to be physical, he's going to be able to use his footwork and timing and D-cells to get off a shot with just a little bit more daylight. So yeah, I think the referee variable works to the Dallas advantage too. But Dallas has to be praying that Kawhi doesn't feel better coming out in game three. Because man, if he turns into that playoff Kawhi Leonard finals MVP, two times finals MVP Kawhi Leonard here in game three, man, wash out.
Yeah, I don't know if that guy exists anymore. You know, I don't. And I voted Kawhi all NBA second team. I'm just not sure that guy exists anymore. Speaking of old people, the Phoenix Suns. Tom, if you guys remember, it was a month ago Tom was here. Tom said the Phoenix Suns will not make the playoffs. He made a bold prediction here. They're in the playoffs. I don't know if they've realized they're in the playoffs, because the Minnesota Timberwolves have told them, you are 48 hours away from going all the way home. The Suns are getting nothing in star production from Booker, from KD, from Beal. And Minnesota, look, Karl Towns made all the dumb fouls in the world last night, right? Every single foul, yeah, was dumb. He had the same look on his face like, oh my God, I just tackled a guy. How dare you call that? Yes, Carl, that's what happens when you tackle someone 35 feet from the basket. All right, cool. Rudy Gobert is not getting played off the floor. Ant-Man doesn't have to score 35 a night for his team to beat you and beat you soundly. I think Phoenix is in big trouble.
Yeah, it's, you know, to me, it's watching Nikhil Alexander-Walker hit those threes, the depth that they have, that it's not just about Ant or Rudy Gobert or Karl Towns. They're getting contributions from everybody. And Jaden McDaniels has been great defensively. Mm-hmm. So when you look at this Minnesota team, it is not about the stars. It is about their depth. It is about how hard they're playing. It's about their youth. On the other side, it's a stark contrast to what you're seeing with the Phoenix Suns. A team, by the way, that played with zero rookies this year. They are backed in the corner with a contract situation that no team wants. They got they're so deep into the tax, the second apron. They got no young studs on the roster because they wanted that way. They wanted to rely on veterans. They got no rookies. They got no future in terms of, you know, hey, if this doesn't work out, we can pivot easily. And this is the problem, is if KD is not able to be, you know, roll back the clock 10 years, if Devin Booker can't dial it up and be just single-handedly a supernova out there, what are they going to do? And to me, using the Chris Paul piece and just basically pivoting with the Bradley Beal contract and hitching your wagon to Bradley Beal's no trade clause, it was so duplicitous to me. It was so redundant to me. You already have two amazing scorers on your team. Why don't you use that piece with, maybe you couldn't get that third guy that I'm about to describe, but a Draymond type, an Aaron Gordon type, a big who can play multiple positions and be that third, you know, lever where it can distribute the ball and do things that KD and Devin Booker aren't going to do defensively. They ended up getting Brad Beal, who's just looking like another guy out there, and he's getting picked up full court by Ant Edwards and getting frustrated, and he's getting out of his game. To me, this team was way too top heavy from the start. And they're looking so much older than we thought they would be at this stage. And I will say, Vinny, if they don't win a game in this postseason, did they make the playoffs at all? And I will win that bet in a technicality, Vinny.
No time.
Oh, no. Come on. Give it to me, ref. No. Give it to me.
They'll have at least a home game. Like if put it like this, here's what I will say. If they don't show up at all, if they get beat by 10 to 15 in every game remaining, in game 3 and 4 at the crib, I will give you that. I'll split the baby. I will split the baby with you. They have to get beat decisively. Remember that Dave Chappelle skit where he was a juror and they said, what would it take for you to believe that this certain R&B singer was on video doing crazy stuff? And he said, you know, give me him with his own ID and, you know, his grandmother verifying his, you know, verifying and all that, and Neil and my buddy taking notes, all that type of stuff. That's what it's going to take for you to actually win this bet. It's actually going to take that for you. It's like a bunch of unrealistic prerequisites. Because, Tom, you planted your flag. You planted your flag. You got to own that.
I know. They got the sixth seed. They missed the play-in tournament, which is a good thing when you miss the play-in tournament. I was wrong about that. They played much better down the stretch than I suspected. But if they go out in 5 games against the Minnesota Timberwolves or in 4 games, I think big changes are going to happen. But what do? They mortgage their future, and Bradley Beal's on a no-trade clause. I mean, maybe you convince Brad Beal that, hey, going to the Miami Heat's a better situation. Do the Miami Heat do that deal with that much money left on his contract? Let me just pull up real quick what the Bradley Beal contract is looking like going forward. Because when we talk about Brad Beal, it's not just that he has a no trade clause. It's that in 2026-27 season, he's going to be paid $57 million. That's in 3 years. He's going to be paid $57 million. Mm-hmm. He's got a player option, but I'm damn sure he's picking up that player option because I'm pretty certain that he ain't going to be worth $57 million of getting that kind of offer on the free agency market in 2 summers.
My man Ray's no fool. And it was just flaws. A, it's flaws in their roster now. It's flaws in how the roster is being used. Having Kevin Durant 30 feet from the basket, telling him to dribble, as opposed to creating offense for Kevin Durant to be the best scorer on earth, that's a flaw in the coaching, right? That's Frank Vogel, who looked like he was losing his ever-loving mind throughout most of that game. That man turned red, or close to red, or whatever shade that is. He turned
close
to
it. He looked like that angry emoji, you know, the red face emoji. Yes. That's what he looked like.
And like you said, the roster flaws of duplication. I understand it from this standpoint. Devin Booker gets hurt. Kevin Durant gets hurt. Let's make it so we're not completely, lack of a better phrase, assed out if one of those guys get hurt. The problem is, to me, you don't have a point guard. You don't have bigs. And I know that bigs have been kind of legislated out of the game like the Bruisers. But that team needed a bruiser. That team needed a dude or a couple of dudes who don't care about scoring, but who are not veteran minimum players on the fringes. Like, you need some actual dudes. And that's not what they have. And it's man, I would not be surprised. You said, what do they do in the offseason if this thing doesn't work and you get swept in four games or you lose in five or whatever it is? I tell you what to do. And I'm saying this in jest. You know what you're supposed to do, right? You trade Kevin Durant. Try to get some draft capital back. That's what you do.
Hey, the rumors are swirling on what he's going to do this, you know, this offseason. If things go sideways, what do you do with Kevin Durant? Because I don't see them moving Devin Booker at his age. You know, he's still in his prime. But what can you get with Kevin Durant now that you got, you mortgage your future for Kevin Durant from the Brooklyn Nets?
You get more for Devin Booker.
Yeah, sure. But don't you want to keep Devin Booker and make him the franchise cornerstone and build around him in ways that, like, he's your guy? But, hey, if it's not Russell Westbrook doing a storybook finish to his career in OKC, I'm just saying.
Well, funny you should say that, because Kevin Durant narrated a Chet Holmgren Nike commercial where Chet Holmgren is wearing KD's shoes.
Now, why would they do that? Why would they do that?
Now, I would not like to spend May and June in Oklahoma City. I just wouldn't. Not my idea of a great time.
Pelicans are trying to end that for you. They're a little shorthanded, but maybe we'll get to that later. But yeah, it's not looking good for the Suns here. And I will say that, like, with Matt Ishbia running the controls in Phoenix, I suspect he will not have the patience, if they go out early, to run it back with this same squad. I just don't see that. New owner syndrome is a real thing.
Absolutely. They get real impatient real quick, especially on a whole bunch of levels, right? Speaking of being impatient, the Milwaukee Bucks, right? Milwaukee Bucks, who fired one coach last year, fired another coach 40 games into the season. And now they got Doc Rivers. I'm not saying it's to be Doc Rivers' fault. Giannis is out. They got ran off the floor by the Indiana Pacers last night, 125-108. We talked about, you know, playoff basketball, lower scores, all that. Tell that to the Pacers. They just play fast. And it's not just Tyrese Halliburton who's getting it off the bounce. It's Pascal Siakam who's initiating a lot of offense. And Tom, I don't know about you, it just seems like, and Dame Lillard had another great game, at least offensively, where he carried them offensively in game one. Game two was a minus 24, but scored 34. Milwaukee's bad offense, or quick offense, leads to the Pacers getting out on the break. I feel like Milwaukee just needs to slow things down, especially while Giannis is not out there. You can't force shots. You can't miss shots at the rim. And that just, all it is just fuel for what Indiana wants to do. And I picked Milwaukee in seven in large part because playoff basketball slows down. Giannis, I suspect, will be back, but I'm not really sure. He's starting to do more on-court work and everything else. But game two was ugly for the Milwaukee Bucks. Chris Middleton left in the second quarter with another ankle injury. Like, what are we settling into here?
It's going to be long. It's going to be a long series. And I think when you saw in game two is what I expected them to do in this series is Indiana running them, not just offensively, but defensively too, picking up full court.
Yeah.
And Pascal Siakam has been the best player in the series. And I know what Damian Lillard did in the first half in both of the games, but this is why you get Pascal Siakam. This is why the Golden State Warriors are looking out from Cancun watching this game. They could have made a deal at the trade deadline to get a Pascal Siakam type player, Lauri Markkanen or something like that. They did not. They stood pat, and now they're looking, you know, from the beach watching these games. So Pascal Siakam, the fact that they got him in that deal with Toronto, excellent pickup, and also the veteran leadership that you need. Rick Carlisle talking about after the game about, you know, how he's been repetitive about keep your edge. Keep your edge in this series. And this series, their edge is their speed. Their edge is getting up in transition and running them out of the gym. And Tyrese Halliburton doesn't have to be the first half of the season, Tyrese Halliburton.
Right.
Pascal Siakam just has to outrun everybody, outwork everybody. And we talk about a team that looks old. How about in the two games this series, the fast break points? Milwaukee Bucks have just six per game, fast break points, six per game in these two games. They look old, and I know that's not their game. Without Giannis, they're not going to be able to beat you up and down the floor. When Giannis is a freight train, gets that rebound and goes, you're not going to stop that dude. But I feel like, you know, it's got to be worrisome that they've split the series going to Indiana. And I've been in Indiana in a playoff game, and there's empty seats in there, so it's not the biggest, loudest home court advantage in the NBA. This isn't a Minnesota, or I'm trying to think of OKC is another one. It's not that kind of rowdy atmosphere in Indiana, but they, now that they've smelled blood, I think you're going to have a much tougher time to get out in transition. They better hope that Damian Lillard can keep those flames going in game three.
Look, man, it's one thing for the Pacers to talk and be chesty and to win the in-season tournament. It's another to steal a game on the road. Not just steal a game, decisively kick your ass and then go home for two games with you not knowing where Giannis is, you feeling like, wait a minute, they can't keep up with us. You know what I mean? Like, they cannot mm-hmm. keep up with us on the break. And any team that loses a top five player, I don't care who you are, you take Denver without Jokic, you take Dallas without Doncic, he's a top five player, probably a top three player. Any team that loses a top three player, that's a big chunk of something. And I think Indiana was going to smell blood anyway. They probably liked this matchup to begin with. But man, Giannis can't rush back, but they need him. They need him in the worst way.
And he's going to try. Like, we know Giannis. He's going to try to play. He's played through injuries at the tail end of the season. And Doc Rivers, as I wrote about it, you can catch it at Yahoo Sports last week. You know, he was like, I love heroes, but I don't love March heroes. I love June heroes, right? You got to be smart about your injuries so you don't aggravate or do something stupid and maybe pop a calf strain or pop a calf muscle in the middle of they're going down the stretch in the season. So Giannis is going to try to come back here. Same with Zion. Same with, you know, we saw Kawhi in game two come back. So they better be praying that somehow he gets that heel factor and he's able to come back in this series. And I think I was more convinced that, you know, the Indiana Pacers fast break, 7 seconds or less playing style would be mitigated in the playoffs where the game slows down. What I didn't realize is they're just going to do that no matter what, you know, like they're not going to need a miss or a turnover to get out in transition. They're getting that ball out of the basket and they're going. And so for the Milwaukee Bucks, they got punched in the mouth. And they have to respond in a big way in game three.
That's going to be so huge. And Milwaukee is the team that I think they are. Let me say this. Because I think Milwaukee can still make a run to the Eastern Conference Finals with a healthy Giannis. If Milwaukee is the team I think they are, they will approach game three with a seriousness. Not to just steal a game on the road, but to punch them back in the mouth in game three. If they don't, man, I got serious doubts, not just for their playoff prospects, but for this particular series. Because they could be going home. And if they're going home for the third straight year where Giannis has won a grand total of one playoff series since winning the title in 2021, questions will be asked. That's all I'm going to say. Questions will be asked, folks. We're going to pause for a moment to pay some bills. And when we come back, we're going to talk Celtics, Heat, Thunder, Pelicans, and top five rookie seasons. You're listening to Wednesdays with Stro on The Good Word. Welcome back to The Good Word. Tom Haberstroh time. I am in L.A. Lakers Nuggets game three tomorrow, Thursday at the Crypto.com Arena. I'm wearing black.
Oh,
Lakers funeral.
That's an interesting color. Oh, wow. You're calling it. That's it.
It's done. I'm cooking some sweet potatoes for the repast. I'm bringing some tequila. I'm not sure if people know. Sometimes at the black funerals, it turns into a party where grieving tears turns into drunk tears, and hopefully nobody fights tears. Ain't gonna be nobody fighting tomorrow. But you got a big number for Nikola Jokic. So go ahead and give me that big, go ahead and hit me with that number.
All right. So I, you know, watching this series, everyone wants to see Jokic against AD and how that matchup works out. Well, it is not working out for AD and the Lakers. In this series, Jokic has had the upper hand and AD's had some moments, but down the stretch, it's Jokic, right? It's Jokic and Jamal Murray and the Denver Nuggets. But what I didn't realize is how consistent Jokic, the Joker, has been around the basket area against the Lakers over the last 2 years. So the big number, I'll give you a little tease here for the audience, just for the good word. 87% shooting at the rim. Jokic against the Lakers in his last 10 games. His game one, where he had not one, not two, not three, but four dunks in game one. Jokic had four dunks in an NBA game. It happened. It really happened. And that is the most he's ever had in a game in his career. And he's doing it against the Lakers, 10 in a row for the Nuggets. And a lot of it is because of that Jokic, who can't jump over a post-it note. But against the Lakers, man, he's flying high.
Anthony Davis might be one of the greatest defensive players of this generation, right?
Can't do anything.
He's got nothing for this fat man. Nada. Jokic calls a limo. Every game calls for a limo. You know what that limo says? Compliments of Mr. Jokic. Get in. Make sure you get to the arena on time. Have your, have your oxygen mask when you're in Denver. Make sure you get your wind. Then when they go to LA, he just wears these dudes down. Do you notice? AD is tired at the end of these games. LeBron is tired at the end of these games. Jokic, for whatever he does in the offseason, he is prepared for the last 6 minutes of every game. Jamal Murray, he can play like complete dog for the for 40 minutes. The last 3 or 4 minutes, he's not even looking at Jokic. They just look inevitable. It's no shame for the Lakers, in my opinion, if they get swept. Like, everybody's going to look for somebody to blame. D'Angelo Russell, Darvin Ham, Anthony Davis, Rui Hachimura, Spencer Dinwiddie. They're going to find somebody. They're going to find a fall guy, right? It could be an usher at crypto.com. They're going to find somebody to blame here. But you're losing to the champs. And you're losing to the best player on earth at the peak of his powers, where your best player, who is Anthony Davis, can do nothing with him. That is incredible to me. That's all. It's incredible.
Yeah, and I remember a Denver coach pulling me aside when I was at a game like a year ago. And he was like, yo, people don't realize how well-conditioned Jokic is. Like, he does workouts after every game. And yes, some players do that. But he'll run stairs. He just outworks everybody. There's not a time in the game where he is going to be the last one down the floor. He always, as soon as that ball is up, he's looking down the floor and he's trying to hit AG he's trying to throw a Hail Mary down the floor, or he's just going to go run. And he does that every play down the floor. And AD does not want part of that life. Nobody wants part of that life. So Jokic, the way he looks, man, it's almost mean. It's mean the way he looks, so flabby and just out of shape, but he's just going to outwork you every game. And that's what happens in the fourth quarter against Anthony Davis in his last nine matchups, plus 45 for Jokic, minus 45 for Anthony Davis in the fourth quarter. And that, to me, tells it all.
That's a number. That's the big number right there from Tom Haberstroh. We're going to move on to a series that's slightly less competitive. I'll say slightly, because the Celtics and Heat ain't but so competitive right now, because there's no Jimmy Butler and no Terry Rozier and all this other stuff. Celtics Heat game two tonight in Boston. The only reason we are considering the fact that Miami can steal a game on the road is because their exposure is on the sideline. Mm-hmm. Nothing in game one says these two teams should be on the same floor with each other right now. Is there any blueprint that Spo can sort of lay out? Because the Celtics seem to have everything, at least in this series, where they have the size advantage, the quickness advantage, the shooting advantage. Did you see anything in game one that would give Miami hope for game two? Or is this just a short march to a four-game sweep or five games.
Vinny, we just had the big number. I'll give you the little number. It's the fact that they barely went to the zone in game one. And they went to zone in game seven against the Celtics and cooked them with the zone defense last year. Different year, different personnel, but I feel like there's a little bit of rope-a-dope, Muhammad Ali, Cassius Clay, the Louisville lip a little bit here, where you're looking at Spo, who didn't pull that out of his back pocket in game one, barely did, not with Bam Adebayo out there. They went to a little bit in the second quarter, I believe, with Kevin Love at the five. I expect that they're going to pull that out for game two. Whether it works or not is anybody's guess, because with a team so three-point dependent like the Boston Celtics, it's a make-or-miss league in general, but it is a capital M when it comes to the Boston Celtics. So if they're hot, if they can take advantage of their three-point shooting in that zone and try to work the ball around to the weak side and get open looks, that's going to be the variable to watch, is how much they're going to lean on the zone defense, which has been their calling card in the postseason the last couple of years. If Eric Spoelstra can use that defense effectively against this really dynamic offense, and I say dynamic in terms of the talent, but they do, I think, get a little too three-point heavy, or at least outside in rather than inside out. So we'll see, but I have a feeling that we're going to see a lot more zone in game two.
That'll be interesting, because you want to seduce the Celtics into turning into a one-dimensional team. The question you often have is, do the Celtics want to be a one-dimensional team anyway? Because all of those guys, all 7.5 of their rotation players, take multiple threes, hit multiple threes. I think Tatum was the only guy that shot under 50% from three in game one. I think he's like 1 of 8. Everybody else was hitting. So it's almost like a pick-your-poison thing. And if you're only hope is, hey, let's hope we can take away stuff at the rim and force them into contested threes, maybe that's it. And I think Miami is sneakily one of those teams that should be seriously entertaining a roster shakeup in the offseason. I'm not sure in today's Eastern Conference what it can look like and what it can feel like if you're asking Eric Spoelstra to take a lesser talented team and to make sugar out of it. Like, I think that's, I'm going to say a disservice to them, but I think they just need more talent as opposed to more guys that Spo can, you know, coach up.
Okay, so on one hand, they didn't have it this year, right? If they get beat bad here by the Celtics, it was a lost season for them. They did not get Damian Lillard. They did not get Bradley Beal. They struck out on a third star. They got rid of Kyle Lowry, and they're hoping that Tyler Hero steps up and becomes that guy. But if you're the Miami Heat, do you look at the fact that they just made a finals appearance and be like, we don't need to change anything? If we have a healthy Jimmy Butler, that's a series. They've beaten the Boston Celtics before, certainly. And you're looking at the contract situation. You're looking at the way the NBA, the landscape is shaping up. You see what's happening in Damian Lillard in Milwaukee. You're probably keeping tabs on that. But other than that, you know, the Miami Heat, I feel like they're just, what, 1 year removed from a finals appearance. Do they shake it up? If Jimmy Butler was healthy and they got kicked to the curb in like 4 or 5 games against the Boston Celtics, I hear you. But I think they might just feel like status quo okay if they get Jimmy Butler healthy. Of course, A, you might not be able to depend on a healthy Jimmy Butler going forward with those Thibodeau miles on him.
Exactly. Yeah, he got Thibodeau miles on him. You know what I mean? And those Thibodeau miles, you can't get no rollbacks on them. You know what I mean? Like, in Jimmy, I believe, is turning 35 in September. And we talked about in, you know, the previous segment, old guys looking old. And Jim, and this MCL injury is not something you can just sort of sneeze at, I don't think. Mm-hmm. And I think you want to put Jimmy in a spot where he doesn't have to do all the heavy lifting. I think you want to put him in a spot where there's another offensively minded, dependable, reliable co-star, Donovan Mitchell. As we move to the Thunder and the Pelicans, I thought the Thunder showed a little bit of rookie nerves in game one, right? The Pelicans still couldn't fully take advantage, but I felt like the Pelicans, when they go long, as far as having Murphy and Nance and Herb Jones on the floor, that's the lineup that you need, especially while Zion is out.
This is really interesting because remember when Zion got hurt in that game against the Lakers? What did Willie Green not do? He did not put Brandon Ingram in that game. And it seems like those two, and I've written about it before, how when those two guys are on the floor, they are not at their best. In fact, in many ways, they look discombobulated. They look disjointed. They look like they're not at their best when Brandon Ingram and Zion Williamson are on the floor together. So it doesn't surprise me that with Zion out, that they look like Trey Murphy and Herb Jones. They look outstanding. And this is, by the way, Trey Murphy is a legit young player in the league.
Yes.
And he deserves more playing time. And I know my guy Zach Lowe mentioned this recently, is the fact they got to make some decisions this offseason because they got to get those two guys more playing time, Herb Jones and Trey Murphy. Yep. And it just seems to me like the other shoe's going to drop. I don't think it's going to be Zion, but I would be surprised if the way they look with just one of those stars out there, the way they look, I think they make changes this offseason. And it's not like a huge thing, but I wouldn't be surprised. You know, they lost a close game in game one. I want to get ahead of myself. But right. How good they look, Vinny, when they got just one of those guys out there versus both of them, it just feels like the chemistry isn't there to be hitching their wagon or building that foundation for the long term when it feels like, hey, they're better with one of them out there.
Well, here's the thing for me. CJ McCollum is not really a point guard by trade. He's just playing the position right now. So because of that, you're asking players who are not necessarily inclined to set up other guys to do so because of that, by function of the position. I think, and we talked about Giannis earlier, when Giannis and Middleton were really getting it going, the thing that struck me about them was that Giannis needed the whole floor. Middleton did not, right? Mm-hmm. Middleton could catch the ball at any point on the floor, and he was going to somehow shoot it within that box that he was at. Mid-post, corner, wing. So they weren't getting in each other's way. Zion needs the whole floor. Strong hand driver, big rim runner. You know what I mean? He's not a shooter, but he needs the whole floor to sort of get himself that runway. Brandon Ingram is a dribble, 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 turn, stop, fadeaway guy. They use too much of the same real estate on the floor to be effective at the same time. I don't think it makes one guy bad or, you know, one guy bad or other guy a bad guy. I just don't think at this point it's necessarily the best fit for each other where you have Herb and Trey Murphy cutting, slashing, spot up shooting.
Vinny, this is why I wrote about it last week. I hate the fact that every series feels like an injury question mark. You know, what do the Pelicans look like if Zion's healthy? Well, first of all, they might not be in this series at all because they might win that game against the Lakers with Zion healthy, right? They might close it out and have a different matchup altogether. And then the same thing with Giannis. Same thing with Kawhi. It's just like all these question marks around the playoffs this year is what kind of player are you going to get? What kind of series are you going to get with these injuries? And we saw with Dallas, you know, Gafford and Tim Hardaway Jr. be out. So I hate the fact that Zion Williamson is hurt. I did like to see him in his first media availability talk about, you know, how hard that was just emotionally to get through what was the breakout game of his career, the biggest game of his career, and then have to deal with that hamstring injury in the closing seconds of that game and how just the emotional turmoil that you go through as a young player who's like 21 years old, who's doing that to AD and LeBron. You know, there's so much in that emotionally with those two franchises, with those two star players. I can see how that could just ruin a guy and have him not be back for the rest of the year. He's checked out. Nah, he wants back. He wants to get out on that floor. And I think in this series, they need all the weapons they can. Maybe they need to stagger B.I. and Zion when he comes back. But there's going to be some questions around this team in general, even before this series, and figure out what they're going to do with B.I. And Zion. But I do think that C.J. McCollum, he came into this season in shape and healthy, and he had the lung scare early in the season. But, man, I'm expecting when they get back to New Orleans that this will be a really exciting series. I think this is going to be a little bit longer than people suspect. With Zion out, I think Pelicans are going to come back.
Are you saying this is going to be a 7-game series? Is that what you're saying, Tom?
I'm not saying a 7-game series, but if Zion comes back here, I mean, I think it would be game 5 at the earliest that he could get back. Yep. It will be interesting. I think OKC is going to win this series in 6, I think is what we called it. I don't say I called it. I'd say we call it at the Good Word on Wednesdays. Our pick was, I think it was OKC in 6. So I'll stick to that.
Y'all see what Tom is doing? He's trying to tie himself to my picks.
That's right.
My picks were made off of a certain logic. He's trying to turn it into the official pick of the Good Word podcast. That's very cute. I like that. But you're right. He could come back initially on May 1st, which is the day of game 5. And the fact that I think that he actually talked to the media, let me know. Because normally with Zion, you keep him away. You operate under the shroud of mystery. You don't hear from him again. And then, you know, everybody says, why did you think he was coming back? The fact that he's talking about it, the fact that he talked about how tough this is and the fact that he is saying it's definitely realistic, he knows something we don't. And that's going to make for a very, very interesting series. Producer John, open your microphone. Every week we have Producer John. He's picking a random category. And Tom and I will give you our top 5s.
It's not quite as random as you make it sound. A lot of the time there's something, a question I want answered. And I use this top 5 to try and answer it. And this week, the question that popped into my head is, did we just watch one of the 5 greatest rookie seasons in NBA history, meaning Victor Wembanyama? So I asked you guys to provide me with your top 5 rookie seasons of all time.
Ooh.
Tom, you can go first since this is Wednesdays with Haberstroh. I'm going to let you go first.
All right. Wednesday starts with W-E. And I'm going to go with Wemby at number 5 on my list. Victor Wembanyama, the alien, 7'5". Don't call him 7'3 or 7'4, people. He's 7'5". He had, after the All-Star break, 24 points, 12 rebounds, 5 assists, and 5 blocks per game. I'm going to repeat that. 24, 12, 5, and 5 after the All-Star break at 20 years old. This dude. He would be higher on this list for me, Vinny, if they didn't have to do the Sohan experiment for half the year that made no sense. And I get like the idea, maybe conceptually, like, hey, we want to try something out because we're also, you know, hoping maybe this guy can develop into a Dennis Rodman type, but with handle and can play point, whatever, Draymond. But when they started coming to their senses and Pop came to his senses, like, oh, let's play with him with Trey Jones and like really prioritize getting him the ball, he was dominant. So Victor Wembanyama, second half of the year and how dominant he was defensively, defensive player of the year, in my opinion. And then you throw in the fact that he was just coming on. I mean, he was one of the top 10 players by the end of the season in the NBA. If you put him on the Warriors, Vinny, if you put him on any team with a real supporting cast, he's MVP conversation. That's how good he was in the rookie season. And I will say my list, just to preface this, my list is age adjusted. So I'm giving more credit to rookies and how old they were when they put up these numbers or put up the campaigns that they did. So I'm just going to give you that. Wemby, I want to hear what you had also on your list.
Well, a special nod to Wes Unseld because the numbers don't say it, right? 13 points, 18 rebounds as a rookie. He was one of those dudes that came into the league like old, and I mean old in age. I just mean like old, right? And he's a special nod to him because he was a rookie of the year and MVP. And that was when the MVPs was voted on by the players. So you know how special you have to be as a rookie to have your peers say, he's the best player in basketball. All right, cool. Number 5 to me.
But he's not on your list.
I had to give him a special nod.
Just an honorable mention. Yeah.
Yes. I don't want the old people to get mad at me. To be like, you only put modern players on here even though I got Jabbar and Bird on here. Number 5 to me, Larry Joe Bird. If you put a rookie Larry Joe Bird in today's NBA, where in the first year of the three-point shot, he shot 41%. He took the Celtics from 29 wins to 61. yeah, Larry Joe Bird belongs. Yeah, there's another guy that he came into the league with, and he's on the list too, but he's a little bit higher. But Larry Joe Bird, number five for me. What about you? Next.
All right, number four, I got Wilt, MVP, also MVP in his rookie season alongside Wes Unseld, I believe the only two in NBA history to do that. 37 points per game as a rookie. That is a record. And also a guy who saw a big jump in the standings for the Philly Warriors that year. So I got Wilt Chamberlain. And I know that era with Oscar and Wilt and Baylor, a little bit juice stats because of the pace of that era and up and down play. But still, 37 points per game. You would normally think that a guy who would win MVP his rookie year, he and Wes Unseld will be at the top of the list. But keep in mind, there were only eight teams when he won it in 1960. So he's not beating out the rest of the talent level that we're seeing in today's NBA. That's number four on my list. So I got five Wemby, four Wilt Chamberlain.
Don't do old people be lying. We're not going to do that. We don't disrespect the old people here. Number four for me, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. Then he was still Lou Alcindor, 28-14 with Milwaukee. He did not win MVP. He was fourth that year. But you could see it coming. Like, out of the 4 years at UCLA, the most hyped rookie at that point to come into the league. That's an easy one, right? Very, very easy. What about number three for you? Because I feel like we have something similar.
I got MJ, Mike, at number three. Top three rookie all time, his season. And again, the youth here is a factor. You know, you could look at David Robinson and his rookie season and what they did with the Spurs, but he was 24 damn years old at that rookie season. You know, when LeBron was 24 years old, what he was doing. So I'm just saying, this is on an age curve. So Michael doing what he did, and Larry, I get it, but he was 23 when he did it. Michael at 21 years old, 28 points per game, I believe, as a rookie, basically 28, 5-5 for the Chicago Bulls. Give me Michael in 84.
Yeah, against my better judgment, I have that Jordan guy very similarly at number three. You know, from a cultural standpoint, I'm not even going to say repeat the numbers, but just, you know, coming to the league. He had hair and he was like a spokesperson for like hair companies and stuff when he was a rookie. Can you imagine that, Stro? That'd be like you having like, you know, you being like hair club for men or something like that. Like, if you in case you guys don't know, Haberstro is bald. You know, he's a part of the Ball Brotherhood. That'd be like Haberstro and John Gennaro, like getting the good word, a hair club sponsorship, you know, for us.
I didn't even do the Bomani pandemic hair, man. I just kept it like this. Although I did do a beard during the pandemic, but me and Bo, we did not take care of the pandemic on the top of our head the same way.
Bo tried. And Bo actually worked with it because the first two series of Game Theory, he was just like, I'm just going to rock with it. I feel him.
Mm-hmm.
Luckily for me, you know, I'm still follically blessed, shall we say. I'm approaching numbers and I still get stuff at the top. Little happy.
Hey, that makes one of us.
That's true. But Michael Jordan just coming into the league just as a rookie out of that North Carolina system, it was just like freeing like a tamed, somebody who was tamed and just saying, hey, go and dunk on everybody. And that's what he did. Now we get to the creme de la creme. Number two for you, Tom.
Shaq Attack, man. Shaq, number two on my list in 92-93 season. He was a beast. 23-13 as a 20-year-old in the NBA when the league was a league of giants. And he was third in the league in blocks, second in blocks per game that year for the Magic. He was sixth in MVP, started that year as a 20-year-old. So Shaq for the Magic. We haven't seen anything like that. The way he rim rocked, pulled down the basket his rookie year, and how light he was, and physically, like, we think of him as Lakers, like big Shaq, like 400-pound Shaq, but 92-93, man, there's not many guys who are like Giannis Antetokounmpo, but that is close. Shaquille O'Neal, rookie year, 20-year rookie, and what he did to those rims.
Shaq with hair. Speaking of dudes with hair, that was Shaq with hair. That's when they called him the Shaq, right? Right? Number two for me, a guy who didn't change uniforms, a guy who didn't change hairstyles. That man did not change hairstyles one damn bit when he was a San Antonio Spur. My man, Tim B. Duncan, right?
Woo.
The numbers are not like super spectacular. He's like 21-12, right? 2.5 blocks, but he helped the Spurs from like 5 wins to 55. Like, oh, great turnaround. But of course, people don't remember David Robinson missed a lot of time his rookie year, or David Robinson missed all the time in the year before. Look at that. Is that the Nike poster?
This is my guy, Ryan Simpson here, who does the art. And yeah, that is the Nike stance right there for my guy, Tim Duncan, former Demon Deacon himself. I feel like I can't believe I didn't put him in my top five. This is blasphemy. I can't go back to Winston-Salem now.
Disrespect. He was all NBA first team. He was fifth in the MVP voting. Probably should have been fourth because Karl Malone was somewhere in there. You know what I mean? Yeah. This is a Karl Malone hate podcast here. This is Karl Malone as a choker.
Does this mean, Vinny, that we have the same number one here?
I think we probably have the same number one.
Magic, baby. Magic, Irv. 1980.
Irv
in 1980. He didn't win Rookie of the Year that year because of Larry. But yep. If they did it after the season, after the postseason, after he went, what was it, 42?
15-7.
15-7 at center. I mean, come on. That has got to be regular season and postseason combined. That's got to be the best rookie season of all time. I'm glad you and I are on the same page on this one.
My man Irv, who was probably laughing at everybody while he was dishing out 42-15-7. My man Julius Irvin, how you doing? Ha, 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 ha. The Magic Man. That, ladies and gentlemen, is Tom Haberstroh. Tom, of course, is a contributor with us here at Yahoo Sports, and also he has the Substack, right?
TomTheFinder.com.
Yeah. See, I remember. I got you. Tom, of course, is here with us every other Wednesdays on The Good Word. Really appreciate you. John Gennaro, of course, is the man with the plan behind the scenes. And thanks to all the others who make this podcast possible. Jake and Dan will be back for No Cap Room tomorrow. I'll be back on Monday for another episode of The Good Word. Where will I be? I have no idea. But until then, everybody be safe.